When we first met, the stars stayed in the sky. And our first kiss, the fireworks, waited till the 4th of July. No music in the air, or church bells anywhere. No poetry or song, but we're still going strong.
Our next guest on Downtown are a successful Emmy Award-winning composer who has written scores for dozens of films and television shows. His younger brother, a successful award-winning actor. You've seen television shows, films, and stage appearances together. They're a terrific musical duo. Been recording and performing for more than 25 years together. That's a little clip, the title song from their latest album, The Way We Love. And they're out on tour in the month of April, coming to Maine, the Stone Mountain Arts Center, on April 15th. We're talking about the Bacon Brothers, Michael and Kevin, who join us this afternoon. Well, guys, thank you so much. It's great to have you on with us this afternoon. Getting back on the road here for the month of April, coming to Maine on April 15th to the Stone Mountain Arts Center in Brownfield. Michael, how long has it been since you guys have been out on the road?
We were trying to figure that out. Definitely, we haven't been on the road for probably 2.5 years, something like that. My memory is we had a tour ready to go 2 summers ago, and that was canceled. And we played a couple of one-offs here and there. But this, as far as being on the road, no, this is definitely the first time in a very long time.
Kevin, does performing live like this scratch a different creative itch than doing film or television work where you don't get that immediate reaction?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I love to perform live. It's a little bit more akin to doing live theater, which was where I really started out. It's all the cliches, you know, the audience feedback, the immediacy, the feel. It's a feeling that for that night, it's never going to be exactly like that again, and that you're able to take that one moment and share it with this group of people who are sitting there in the dark.
I'll ask the older brother this. You guys have avoided the pitfalls of some other famous brother acts through the years. How much of this, Michael, has to do with your upbringing in Philadelphia and having 6 kids all under one roof?
I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, we had to get along. We were brought up in a very small house, and we were pretty much, it was 5 stories high, but it was about 15 feet wide. And we were all in there. And luckily, when Kevin came around, some of our eldest sisters were already out of the house, you know, college and stuff like that. But we're a very close family, and we still remain a very close family. And, you know, if we have things, we figure out how to work it out. And we share a bond of having, you know, when you have a band, it's not only all the musical connections, but you know, it's a business, and it's having a business with one sibling is really a plus, because there's a sense of trust that no matter what doesn't exist if you go into business with someone who's not a relative. So it's all worked out well. I mean, we 27 years, and I think this is our 12th release, something like that, and proof is pudding.
So, Kevin, all this time, 27 years, were there people who initially, maybe without even giving it a chance, dismissed the music because of your success as an actor?
There still are. I mean, I think that's
sure.
I think that's just the name of the game. And I didn't personally go into it thinking, that was not a surprise to me, because I know that, you know, I do the same thing. I'm sorry to say, if I hear about an actor as a band, I'm kind of like, oh, really? Okay, let's see how this is. I think there's just a fundamental kind of resistance to that idea, because we've really put our musicians in this culture really on such a pedestal, you know, and we also feel like what they do is so magical and unattainable that the idea that somebody would just go and that does something else, you know, well, or has had a career, I think there's an element of kind of resentment about it, you know. I don't think it really cuts the other way, I might say. I think that people are pretty supportive of musicians who want to act. And I think I personally feel that most people think acting is easy and music is hard.
We're talking with the Bacon Brothers here on Downtown. The most recent album, The Way We Love, is so good. It's a terrific showcase for your skills and for your love of lots of different styles of music. Well, what we would call for a SoCo, if I got that right.
You pronounced it perfectly.
Excellent.
One of the rare times we hear it pronounced.
Now, you guys usually write separately, Michael, but I understand the wonderful collaboration on the album, Mama Pop Culture, let's just say, a delayed collaboration?
Well, that's an interesting one that you brought up. Is I wrote the lyric, and I knew that if I took on writing the music for it, it wouldn't be what I wanted it to be, because I wanted it to be kind of ghastly and just raw. So I sent it over to Kevin, and I didn't hear anything for about 6 months. And, as you said, a delayed reaction. And all of a sudden, one day, there the song was. And I can't figure out how to play it live. In fact, I'm going to work on that today and see if there's any way I could cobble something together for it. Because one thing that's really neat is Kevin wrote this wonderful song called Erato, which is a little bit like Mama Pop Culture in that it's about this female figure who is denying access to something. In Arado's case, the songwriter is trying to get her to bless the artistic pursuit of writing songs and make stuff easy because it hasn't been easy. And you know, you need the muse. It's simple as that. Whereas Mama Pop Culture is somewhat related in that it's a ambivalent feeling towards what one must do when you're in the entertainment business. And being a famous musician is, or rock star is, you have to have that desire. I mean, otherwise, where's your motor going to be? And so it's always going to be something I'm trying to attain, but there's a lot of stuff about it that is not comfortable for me. You know, when I first started performing, I was painfully shy, I mean beyond shy, and I had to learn how to do it and had to learn how to get up in front of people and put that away and come up with something else. So the song, really, I'm really happy with the way it came out because it's definitely a very personal statement about my relationship with my career.
Picker is a terrific song, too, and you explain that Kevin wrote this about you growing up as a young guy in Philadelphia, falling in love with music. But as you mentioned, he wasn't around. You're 9 years older than him. So how did the little brother do telling your story?
Well, this song that you're speaking about is called Picker. And, yeah, in fact, he did another song. Was that song on our last album called British Invasion?
That's on the new one, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's on the new one, right. And that's kind of the same thing. It's, you know, I sometimes tell, you know, we're sitting around and having dinner or whatever, and I tell Kevin these stories of childhood, and I don't realize that it makes his gears turn. It's really fun to see his interpretation of my life before he was born, or when he was very young.
Careful what you say.
I know it.
I love Corona Tune. You and I are the same age, so everybody's sort of going through this same thing right now. And, man, it's just so powerful. I love the lyrics. I believe when we're gone, we're gone. I take comfort they can't see what's going on. It's something so many of us can relate to these days.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of talk about during the pandemic that everyone was having these kind of creative blooms. And I mean, when we first went into lockdown I didn't for a while, you know, I was just kind of like, I don't know, focusing on, getting through the day and wiping down my vegetables with alcohol, you know, and, you know, all this, everything else that ever he was. And then that song just kind of popped out. I mean, it's funny because it's called Corona Tune, and you know, I like the joke that it sounds like a country song that'd be like, floating down and on a rubber raft, drinking beer on a river, you know. I mean, but it's actually about the virus. But I was thinking about my parents, and they're both gone, and that was basically the sentiment. I'm glad they're not checking this out, because it would have been very hard for them.
The title song, "The Way We Love," is so good. The video you guys did at the Grand Ole Opry is terrific as well. And I just love the message. I feel like it's a love song for real people.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I was thinking of you the other day, Michael, when I read the news about the discovery of Ernest Shackleton's Endurance.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and you had written the score for the Nova episode about that. What an incredible story.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize it.
Did you see the thing of the times? The boat is just almost perfectly intact. It's really kind
of incredible,
startling.
But the Nova that you did, that was about the search board. That wasn't obviously about the discovery, right?
No, this is a long time ago. Yeah, this was
a long time ago. Okay, yeah. Okay, all right.
Michael, yeah, what's
an amazing story?
What's the key to composing a score that helps a filmmaker tell a largely visual story?
Well, the key to and I teach film scoring, so I can go on for hours about this. But the film scoring is less about the music that you write, though obviously that's important, and more about getting an understanding of how the music that you write affects the person that has hired you to enhance their film. So, what I'm very lucky is I've been doing it for so long, and I've had and continue to have conversations with directors and producers about music and how it affects them. And I've become really pretty expert at listening to people talk who know nothing about music, but love it and find it incredibly important, and knowing how to interpret that and then put it through my oral lens of composition and know kind of, I just get a feeling of what they're looking for. And once you understand that, then you go into your actual composition, and it's just much easier. But it's always going to be. I saw an interview with Danny Elfman, and there's a thing called a temp score that temp the music that they never can use, and when the composer gets the film, it already has all this music in it that has to be replaced. And even at the level of Danny Elfman and John Williams, it's still, you know, a really difficult thing, because people fall in love with the music. It becomes part of the film, and they see it with the film for, you know, a year while they're editing, and then all of a sudden you come in and you drop something in that's different. It's just, it's always difficult, and avoiding those kinds of things is a big part of being a film composer.
Kevin, I saw on social media you're filming the new season of City on a Hill. We're looking forward to that. But I love the short film that you and Kira did. Can you talk a little bit about Until?
We shot it, during the pandemic. We just kind of went, let's do this. We got a couple of, we were using the iPhone 11 Pros. Grabbed some cheap lights on Amazon. We shot the whole thing ourselves and operated it and did the set decoration and wrote it and starred in it. Our son Travis wrote the music for it. It was kind of about, loss and dealing with loss. Obviously, we were reading a lot about that, people that were losing, people that were close to. We had people that we knew that died. And so, yeah, I mean, that was just a way of, our way of, doing what we know how to do, which is make movies, and just kind of working our way through it. And also, giving us something to focus on, really. I mean, I think that I think a lot of us needed just something
We've had the pleasure on our show of talking with Paul Reiser, Steve Guttenberg, Michael Tucker about one of my favorite movies all time. Can you talk a bit about the experience of making a Diner with Barry Levinson and that great cast?
Well, it was a great experience. You know, I've made a lot of movies, and then there's a few that you really just hold on to, and you hold on to the memories, and that was one of a handful. All of the guys, we were all at a certain point in our lives. I think we're coming up on the, what would it be, the 40th anniversary, I think,
right.
Something like that, this year. You know, I have a tremendous amount of fondness for those guys. In fact, we all reconnected during the pandemic. Somebody, I can't remember who generated this, said, you know, can we just get together? And we did. You know, I actually went up to my attic, happened to be up in my attic, one of the many things that I was doing is cleaning things out, you know, and found this box and found a whole bunch of, obviously it had a Polaroid camera on me when we were doing the movie, and I found all these funny, you know, behind-the-scenes pictures of us that I snapped on a Polaroid that were fading and you know, yellowed and curling, and I took pictures of them with my iPhone and sent them around to all the guys. And they, you know, we were like, oh, who's that? Oh, you remember that guy? And, I have a deep, deep fondness of making that movie.
Guys, thank you so much. I love the new album. Looking forward to seeing you when you come to Maine in April. Have a great time out on the road.
I can't wait to get to Maine. That's going to be awesome.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon. Be safe out there, and hopefully we'll talk to you again down the road.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rich. Take care. Okay.